sack? Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate Company and leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team. And we have an interesting show for you today. I am here with Ken McBride, who, by the way, I feel pretty fortunate about this because Ken retired from Chicago Title as president of Chicago Title about how long ago is it?
About 3 weeks ago.
And I called him and I said, before your brain goes to full retirement mode, could you come on and do the show that we'd planned on doing, which was on FinCEN? And so we're doing that. We're also, later we're going to talk about the Supreme Court ruling on property rights for the lady in Minnesota. I think she was 94 years old.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So let's just start right off, Ken.
We better start before my brain turns to mush.
There you go. I know that's exactly what I told you. When, before your brain turns to mush, let's get you on the radio one more time. And congratulations on your retirement. How fun is that?
Well, thank you very much, Becky.
You don't even know what to do, do you?
Not really. No.
Okay. So FinCEN, FinCEN.
Yeah, it's the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network of the U.S. Department of Treasury. And it was set up, it was actually established in the series of laws that were enacted with the Patriot Act after the 9/11 events. And part of the idea is that one of the more effective ways to fight terrorism is to follow the money. And so the part of the idea was that we want to have tools in place so that law enforcement can track funds that are being used for an illegal purpose. And of course the thought at the time was to use them to enforce funds that are being used for terrorist activities. But needless to say, that law, like many others, has expanded and is being used certainly to fight and to track funds that are transferred in the advancement of any illegal enterprise,
domestic or abroad.
Domestic or abroad, but and interestingly enough, to circle back around. One of the tools that people, criminals, have used in the past to launder money, to take money that is obtained through an illegal enterprise or that you're getting for an illegal enterprise, and to launder it, is to use real estate to make a cash purchase of property and then later sell that property for cash, and then you get that money now is fully laundered, and it's no longer traceable to an illegal activity.
You know, that is something that it raises a realtor's eyebrow sometime when particularly a foreign entity, which could be an individual or an organization of some sort, comes in and buys Oklahoma land, farmland, house, apartment, whatever they buy, with cash, and they pay above top dollar for it. That's should be a red flag for somebody, right?
Well, it does raise suspicions, but one of the difficult things about real estate, and it makes it challenging for law enforcement, is that normally on real estate, the value is in a range. It's not a set thing. And someone could be paying at the top end of the range, and they might have some use for the property that might enhance its value in the future. Or they might believe that that the transportation access is going to improve to this property over the next 10 years. And so they're willing to pay more for it. So it raises a red flag. But by the same token, one of the reasons that criminals use real estate is that there are also a lot of good reasons why someone might pay near the top of the value of the property that are actually legitimate reasons.
Right. And how do you tell the difference?
Well, it's extremely difficult. What FinCEN has done is that they have geographical areas that they have designated as one of their high-risk geographical areas. And the only one, there are several in the United States that they have designated. They send out this designation every year. And when they designate a geographical area as one of their areas of emphasis, then title companies who close and handle transactions in that area have a whole new set of responsibilities. And one of those responsibilities is that when there's an entity that's buying or selling property, they have to dig deep and find out who owns that entity.
Right. So if we had a Chinese buyer that was from China, not a Chinese American, but a Chinese buyer buying a big acreage over by Tinker Air Force Base, would that raise a red flag?
Well, it might or it might not. But if this was, fortunately, we're not one of these high risk areas, thank goodness. But for example, if this was occurring in Miami, Florida, in the Dade County, Florida area, that's a high risk area, and a lot of money has, quite frankly, been laundered through South Florida, and so they are paying particular attention there. But if a LLC came in that to buy that property that may or may not be affiliated with some kind of foreign interests, but that LLC was owned by another LLC, a limited liability company, and then another limited liability company owned that, and then a corporation owned that, then a title company involved in that transaction is going to have to ask questions and dig deep to find out each layer of ownership and who is actually involved in these layers of ownership. As it is right now in our part of the country, if there is a legitimate entity and it's been properly created and properly established, we don't have to dig into, you know, who are all of the stockholders in this corporation, or who are all the people who are interested in this particular entity. We're not really required by the government to do that. And as long as it's a legitimate entity, that entity can own this property, unless there's something, you know, something else going on that that might impact that. But in certain parts of the country, the title company has a responsibility, a legal responsibility under the FinCEN regulations to dig deep and to find out who's actually involved in the transaction.
So there's a lot of layers to this. And even though we're not in a target area, what action does a realtor take and what does a title company take when they run into a situation like this? We're going to dive deep into this when we get back with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, and I thank you for tuning in to us. We've got lots of things coming up in our world. We do a lot of volunteerism, Ken. My guest today, by the way, Ken McBride, retired recently from Chicago Title. And the things that we do, and we have a very busy month because we volunteer at Toby Keith's Kids Corral, which is a boutique hotel for cancer, pediatric cancer patients and their families. So we provide meals there. We provide meals for Sisu, which is like at 30th and Penn. It is a shelter for homeless youth, about 14 to 24 years old. And we just do an awful lot of stuff like that. So anyway, I just wanted to let you guys know, sometimes you're going to see us at places you don't expect to find a realtor. We've got Matt McLean on the line.
NMLS number
1197740.
Matt McLean with SWBC Mortgage. We thank you for being with us today. Tell us what's happening in the mortgage industry.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. This week, I don't have the very best news. Rates were a little volatile, and there's a lot of attention, obviously, with the debt ceiling, and mortgage rates have reacted to that attention. So we're up a little bit. But the thought is, at least the expectation is, that hopefully it'll be temporary.
Well, how do we know what rates are going to be? I mean, is there any indication? And what are they right now?
Yeah, so a lot of people think that mortgage rates follow the Fed fund rate, and that's not necessarily true. But probably the best indicator or index is the 10-year Treasury. So if that's something you're into and you want to monitor mortgage rates, then watch the 10-year Treasury in its direction, and that's typically how mortgage rates will react.
Okay, so what are our rates now?
Specifics, rates are in the 7.25 to 7.5 range. So you know, we haven't been there in quite some time, and hopefully we'll see those decrease soon. But if you want to know specifically for you as a client what your rate would look like, then encourage you to reach out to Dean or I. We can have that discussion.
Well, because there's ways to get the rate down, and you guys can guide anybody right along to figure that out, exactly how to get that rate down to a manageable number.
That is correct. We have options, and we certainly, that's something that we would discuss, yes.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you, Dean. SWBC Mortgage, to find them, just go to BeckyIvins.com, and on the right-hand side of the page, you're going to see a tab that says Becky's Favorites, and the contact information's right there. SWBC, there's actually a link straight to their own website, and sit down and talk to Dean or Matt, or just call them on the phone. They'll talk to you and kind of figure things out for you. Thank you, Dean. Okay, we're talking to Ken McBride here and about FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Act, Criminal Enforcement Network, or something like that, and how that
it's
works.
It's actually the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network.
Okay. Financial Crimes Enforcement Network.
That's part of the Treasury Department. And like I said, it was set up with the thought in mind of tracking and being able to somehow follow the funds that are used to support terrorism throughout the world. And following the money seems to be, you know, in some instances, a very effective law enforcement tool. But since then, it's also been used effectively against laundering of drug money and money that's obtained through other types of illegal activities. And it's basically designed to make it difficult for people to launder money that is either obtained through an illegal enterprise or is intended to support an illegal enterprise.
Yeah, and how do you find out if it's an illegal company and who owns that legal company? How do you trace that?
You know, that's extremely difficult, and that's one of those things that the government has kind of passed off the job of doing that to the title companies in a particular area. And the title companies have to work with their customer and go to them and say, we need to see documentation as to who actually owns this entity. As most people know, in most parts of America, it's not that difficult to keep your ownership of an entity confidential. In fact, we have people who, for whatever reason, they may not want their name in the newspaper or associated with the fact that they bought a home of a particular size.
And, you know, I had that happen years ago. The rule, I guess, if it had to be published, was it was $300,000. I'm sure that's probably changed, the monetary amount. But I had a guy that offered $299,999, and he said, I realize that this house is listed at $305,000. I think it's worth every penny of it, but I don't want this published in the paper that I purchased a house this expensive. He was a young attorney in town, and his firm actually told him, do not put that in there in the newspaper. So it was, he probably could have asked for it not to be published. But anyway, he chose to pay part of the seller's cost in order to get the purchase price down so it wouldn't be published.
Yeah. There are a lot of people who are very concerned about that for a variety of legitimate reasons. I mean, this, you know, I believe people are certainly entitled to some privacy with regard to their financial affairs. But we do have a law that requires that the documentary stamps be paid on the actual purchase price. And so that makes it a matter of public record, and anybody can go and check that. It doesn't, you know, whether it's in the paper or not, it makes it public. And once, and now with the days of social media, once it's public, it's public, and it's out there. But there are people who use a variety of entities sometimes to purchase their home. It can be, you know, a trust can purchase the home for a family, and the trust doesn't have to have the name of the family members in the name of the trust. The trust could be could have a name that's unrelated to the family, but it's there are a lot of people who, and unfortunately, some people, we've had some customers who would reach out to us after a transaction and say, oh no, people are going to know about this, and they don't think about that until it's until the transaction's completed and it's already in the public record, and some people find out, oh no, everybody knows what I paid for my home.
What would be some of the reasons why you would not want the public to know?
Well, you know, people, once you get into a certain level of wealth, I think that people rightly begin to have perhaps some concern for whether they're attracting attention from potential criminals, people who would want to be a threat to them or their family in order to blackmail them or somehow kidnapping or any other kind of criminal endeavor, even a burglary, even people who think that so-and-so spent this much for the house, there must be wonderfully valuable things in there and we need to burglarize that home. They're drawing attention to your wealth is also something that some people don't think is really appropriate and that they don't intend to or even want to participate in something that would draw attention to their level of success, just out of personal humility and modesty or whatever. There are a lot of legitimate reasons why people may not want others to know that they're the ones who bought a particular large piece of property. And we respect that, and title companies and real estate professionals respect that. But the time to think about that really is when you're starting to look for property and before you get a contract, not after the closing. This is one of those things that the earlier in the transaction that you consider the level of privacy you want, the better it'll be.
Well, and there is the FinCEN is far-reaching, and how does it affect title companies in a as a because this is a criminal enforcement of the law. I mean, it's not a civil thing, and it's criminal. And how does it affect real estate professionals? We're going to talk about that in depth when we come back, because are realtors subject to felony charges if they participate in this without being diligent? More when we get back for after the break on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We appreciate that you would tune in today to learn about FinCEN and our word of the day. It is time for our word of the day, and that is brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair. You can trust them to tell you the truth as to whether or not you need to file an insurance claim or a whole roof, whether residential or commercial. They do every kind of roof. I mean, if you've got a slate roof, they'll help you out. If you've got a tin roof or what do you call it, metal roof? Probably not tin, but a metal roof. They will help you out. And I want to tell you, anyone who has not called Robbins Roofing in the last month needs to call Robbins Roofing. I sent him by three properties that I own, and all three of them are totaled with hail. And there's no inside leaking yet, but you don't want the inside leaking. You want it to be, you want not damaged inside your house with water from rain. So do give them a call at 728-3700, 405-728-3700. They will check out your roof and let you know, is it time to file an insurance claim or not? And I will tell you, our hail has been widespread. And he said, well, in fact, he texted me yesterday, Larry did, saying, you're safe to call in a hail claim on your office. And I was going, well, shoot, man, I hate that. But it's time for us to paint the exterior of our office. So we're going to get the new roof, then paint the exterior. And so anyway, when we're talking with Ken McBride here, and we're talking about our word of the day, and that is enforcement. So what is enforcement?
You know, one of the reasons that we chose this word has to do with the, we're talking about an organization that the acronym is FinCEN, and it's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. And like we said, those people in Washington who work on acronyms are busy all the time. I don't know where they come up with some of their acronyms, but the purpose of the this Department of Treasury enforcement arm is to carry out its mission by receiving and maintaining financial transactions data, analyzing and disseminating that data to law enforcement purposes, and building global cooperation with organizations in other countries. So it's a very important matter. And where it enters into real estate is when people use real estate as a means of laundering money, either laundering money that has come from a source that they want to hide the source of that money, run it through a real estate transaction. Then if someone traces the money back, they'll trace it back to proceeds from sale of real estate rather than from some foreign entity or from some illegal activity such as the sale of illegal drugs.
Well, and money laundering, by the way. We never really did even quite define that, but it's the process criminals use to disguise illegal origin of their funds. Like, where did the money come from to start with, right?
Right.
So you have to get into a lot of them get into a cash business of some sort. Did you ever watch Breaking Bad?
I didn't, but I've certainly heard a lot about it.
Yeah, I mean, they bought a car wash, big car wash place, because that was cash, and it was the most successful car wash in the States, I guess, because they made a lot of money, and that way they could take out some of their ill-gotten money and use it, assuming that it came from profits from the car wash, right? So
well, and that's, you know, a lot of people think, well, why did they have to launder the money in the first place? But if the money can be traced back to an illegal enterprise, then law enforcement can seize that money or seize what was bought with that money. I remember a particular transaction that happened many years ago, this was back when we still occasionally would handle a true cash transaction, but small home, like, you know, $50,000 home, which, you know,
today's world would probably be $250,000.
Yes, in today's world would be considerably more. But this couple came in and they brought actual cash money in a very elaborate hand-tooled leather satchel that had a big hand-tooled eagle on the front of it. It was really pretty elaborate, obviously a hand-tooled leather satchel. And when the law enforcement caught up with them, they were drug dealers. When law enforcement caught up with them, they were able to seize that home that was bought for cash by the identity of that satchel, because it's the satchel they received the drug money in. So they had one. They had a, you know, it's hard to trace cash,
right?
But this cash was traceable because this couple had received the money for their drugs in that very distinctive satchel, and our closer was able to identify that satchel as the satchel where the money came out of there.
Well, I wonder how they figured out that the money went in there from the drug.
I think they had someone on the inside.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They had someone on the inside who had actually witnessed the drug transaction and would testify about the nature of the transition. So laundering money is a big deal, and there's a certain amount of due diligence that like you and I have talked about, that if someone's involved in a transaction and it appears that the source of the funds is questionable, or if there are some other questions about is this actually being used to launder money for any illegal activity, which would include terrorism, which includes fraud, which includes a lot of other things, then a real estate agent needs to make certain that they do an adequate amount of due diligence and that they don't associate themselves with that transaction.
You know, that would be hard for some real estate professionals to do that because, first of all, you're busting your own deal, so no commission for you. And secondly, you don't want to tick off the criminal that may be carrying the gun, right? I mean, so bringing attention to that transaction, can real estate professionals be a part of the criminal activity by just ignoring it?
Well, that's a very difficult question, and it's very difficult from a standpoint that if you know that or have a reason to know that there are some things that are criminal involved in the transaction, then at that point, I think the real estate agent needs to seek legal advice, because this is not always as clear-cut as it may sound. And certainly walking away from a transaction and even from the income that could come from a transaction is better than dealing with the consequences of financial liability. And let me just say this, it doesn't get a whole lot of publicity, but we have handled plenty of transactions in the Oklahoma City area where properties have been seized by the government because the property was acquired with the proceeds of an illegal enterprise. And that illegal enterprise, you know, think about it, could be any number of things, including securities fraud, including sometimes there are people who are misled into an investment scheme, and property that's bought with the proceeds of that illegal activity is subject to seizure.
Do you know, I was involved in one of those one time, and the folks found out that it was a Ponzi scheme here in central Oklahoma to where they invested their life savings into this person. And I think her name was Marcia something. But, I mean, it was a big deal at the time. And they purchased a new home, sold their home they'd been in for like 35 years that was paid for, and bought this new home that had a small mortgage on it. But then they invested the rest of their money, and they sold it after she was caught, and they did not have to relinquish the money. But that was a real threat because they thought, we're going to lose what little we have. So they ended up moving up with the ill-gotten gains, which they thought was legit, and then they moved down because they only had so much money left over from doing these transactions. And it was very sad because they were very honest people, and they thought this person was investing their money and making good money. So her 90-some-year-old dad invested over $900,000 with this person, and they only got back like $100,000+ of that in the end. And that was just, I mean, so, so sad that the financial, that one person can get involved in an illegal activity and affect so many people on that. So will realtors get in trouble?
Well, they can. And again, if someone once said, if you've got a transaction that doesn't pass the smell test, that sometimes you need to step back and look and consider your own risk and so forth. But, you know, most real estate professionals that I've dealt with in my career are not going to involve themselves in an activity that could expose them to any kind of criminal liability. Criminal liability is very serious, and no one wants to take that lightly. And the thing that someone needs to be careful about in the real estate business is that they're dealing with reputable people, they're dealing with honest people, and that if there's something that doesn't add up, that they ask questions. There is a need sometimes to do a little bit of due diligence and reach out and find out if the people you're dealing with are the people you're dealing with. We are in an environment right now where we have a lot of investors. We have a lot of investors who are remote, who don't live in this area, and it's more difficult to do your due diligence to determine that these people are legitimate, and that they are even who they say they are. But there is a certain burden on everyone in the transaction to be forthright and to ask a few questions.
And there's a lot of banking regulations that come with this, and that's the part that I understand, but I really object to. We're going to talk about that when we return with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, and our guest is Ken McBride, the recently retired president of Chicago Title, who has agreed to come and talk to us about FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, I think is what that stands for. So, okay, it is time for Hot, Hot, Hot It's time for a smoking hot deal brought to you by Casa Perico Mexican Grill, where their smoking hot enchiladas and their ice cold margaritas will have you coming back time after time. They are located on the southwest corner of 122nd and Penn, what just west of Meridian on Northwest 63rd, and now on Route 66 in Yukon. Delicious, wonderful Tex-Mex and authentic Mexican food. Okay, our smoking hot deal today is something that a lot of you are looking for. This is priced at $325,000, and it is only a couple years old. It's 7408 Northwest 159th Terrace, right off of Rockwell. And this is a, well, it's practically new. It's got a bachelor living there that I doubt has cooked very much. So the kitchen's like new. It's an open floor plan. Got a decent-sized backyard, a three-car garage. And it's a three-bed, two-bath, a nice big open living room. Going to be open tomorrow. We typically do not hold a house open on Memorial Day weekend or Labor Day weekend, because people are outside and around. It's a little bit cooler than most Memorial Day weekends, and we decided that this just went on the market again yesterday. It's rare that we have a transaction that does not go through, but a realtor brought us a deal. Buyer did not qualify. House qualified. All the repairs, the one repair they asked for got done the same day. And so it's a great opportunity if you're looking for something that is practically new. And that is at 7408 Northwest 159th Terrace. That's an Edmond address, but most of us think about this as kind of the Deer Creek area because it's Deer Creek Schools. So go see Joe. He's going to be there tomorrow at the open house. And that our smoking hot deal was brought to you by Casa Perico Mexican Grill. Okay, Ken. Let's talk about the threshold for reporting this financial crime, money laundering, if you suspect it, and who's likely to be the ones that are held responsible to the enforcement agency.
Well, most of the responsibility for reporting under this act falls to the lending institutions, the financial institutions themselves, banks and others involved in real estate lending or some other type of lending. They have a responsibility to the government and the title company.
Well, because often it's a cash transaction, so the banks aren't so involved.
That's true. The banks aren't as involved, but normally that cash at one point or another goes through a bank. And so they do have some responsibility, but the title companies have to report a transaction that's over $300,000 in cash in these areas that are targeted areas. And they have to determine if there's an entity involved, who are the parties who are behind that entity, who are the actual parties in interest. And so that's part of the responsibility of the title companies. And it's a significant chore. If you've got people who are working at concealing their identity, then it makes it even more difficult. And sometimes if a title company cannot make an adequate determination in good faith as to who's behind a transaction, then they're not permitted to handle it.
Oh, okay. So kick it down the road and let another closing company that doesn't have the scrutiny may decide to close that, right?
But it's a significant risk. If you don't comply with this federal law enforcement statute, it's like you said, it's not a civil statute, it's a criminal statute. And so most title companies take these regulations very seriously.
The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, is this something that would have been maybe have been on a first name basis with Al Capone in the day?
Could have been.
Yeah, right. Okay, we're going to talk about property rights.
Right.
And the only national committee I have been on is Property Rights Committee. And personally, I didn't think I had a whole lot to add to the committee, but I figured I would learn something, and I did. Learned a lot about property rights. But that's been in the news this week. This, was it 94-year-old lady from Minnesota?
94-year-old lady from Minnesota. And unfortunately, Minnesota has laws that are very different from Oklahoma. And people need to understand that what happened to her would never have happened in Oklahoma. And basically, her condo was sold for taxes. And simply enough, the county sold, she didn't pay her taxes. The county sold her property for taxes. The taxes that were owed, the difference between what they sold it for and what the taxes that were actually owed on it was $25,000. And in Minnesota, that money goes to the county.
Oh.
And they get to keep it. And there's like 10 other states that have laws like that. I don't know why. It doesn't seem very fair to me that the county not only gets to sell your property and get the taxes that are owed, but whatever equity you've got in your property, they get to get that too. And actually, the Supreme Court came down this last week and said not so much. They said this is not consistent with the Constitution, and they seemed, and I haven't actually read the opinion, but the news accounts of that opinion seemed to indicate that the court felt like this was an unjust taking by the government of the equity in this lady's property. And of course, that's the way most states look at it, is that most states, the state law requires that if there is equity in the home above the taxes that are owed, that goes back to the property owner. And our laws have always been that way. But you know, the Supreme Court came in and is limiting what the state can do in that instance.
Well, there's a lot to property rights, and we can't get into all of it, but I appreciate your reporting on that. And Ken McBride, what a pleasure. Would love to have you come back. But I understand that David Patrick and Janice might come back, or Cheryl might come back and
sure.
Be on the radio with us, but we're going to try to drag you in at least one more time. And we appreciate that your service to our real estate community over the last many decades. So thank you.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you. Let's hear Jim Ivins sing us out.
And may all of your wishes come true.